Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase. You know it's a Predators game day. Our game day broadcast brought to you, or from Bridgestone Arena, brought to you by Hermitage Design Center. Darren, Donick, and Chase. Our show presented by Creation CBD. Creation CBD products curated for life. Mitch Light from The Athletic. We talk a little college football with him following Clark Lee of Vanderbilt every Tuesday on the show. Mitch, how you doing?
I'm good, Darren. Hope you're doing well.
Yeah. We got a loaded schedule this weekend, don't we? Last weekend, not so much, but some intriguing games this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. And, you know, as we say, even when the schedule, that's one thing about college football. Like in the NFL, if it's not a great schedule, there's a finite amount of games. I mean, I guess there's a finite amount of college football games, but when there's like 30 or 40, there's always going to be something crazy like Penn State, Illinois. You don't think you're going to see overtime game.
You know, please tell me you were watching that. I was.
I believe I was on my way home from my son's baseball game, checked my phone, saw it was an overtime, figured I was going to miss the end, got home, put my keys down, my wallet down. I figured, okay, game will be over. Like, still had another half hour to go.
I know. You know, we talked about this yesterday. How many people do you think really know the new overtime rules?
More people now than did before.
Yeah, right. I know.
I think you're right. I think people learned
that
day. There's
no doubt about that. But I'm sure if you're watching it, you're like, what in the heck is going on, right? I bet a lot of people did that.
Yeah, I mean, to me, I was there to be entertained. If I had a interest in one of those two teams and didn't think it was the fairest way to settle it, maybe I'd have a different opinion. But I thought it was entertaining. The thing that was dumb, in my opinion, they give the teams the option which side of the field they want to play, but the switching sides of the field, you know, they talk about player safety and limiting the amount of plays, which in theory, even though that went 9 overtimes, Nicole Auerbach from The Athletic has a story on that today about how it achieved the goal because they didn't have as many plays as the normal overtime. But making these guys walk the length of the field, and, you know, Brett Bielema joked, he's like, I'm not in the best of shape there. I was having a tough time walking down the sideline. So, I would have liked to see them, you know, stay in the same end zone. It would have been a little quicker there, but I thought it was entertaining.
So Michigan, Michigan State, 11 a.m. kickoff in East Lansing. I think it's really intriguing. Obviously, Michigan is off to the 7-0 start. So is Michigan State. How do you think this one ultimately plays out? Because we've seen some wild finishes in the past between these two teams when it comes to this rivalry game.
Yeah, a quick story on that is, I mean, you guys might know, as Willie knows, my wife, Heather, is a Michigan State grad, and I was doing, and the game you're referring to was the errant punt.
The,
I mean, that's still one of the most
punt.
Amazing finishes in sports you'll see. I remember it was after Vanderbilt, I was doing sidelines for Vanderbilt, I was in the Vanderbilt locker room after a loss to South Carolina, and like that's one of the oldest locker rooms. The equipment used to never work there. I'm trying to get the equipment working. And my phone, I get like 5 or 6 texts in a row, and my kids were younger. Heather's texting me, so I'm figuring something's wrong, like, you know, with my kids. And she's like, oh my God, State, this, blah, 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 block punt. Like, I had no idea what was going on. I just looked at my phone, I was like, something crazy just happened. But I didn't know until later how crazy that was. But, yeah, I mean, this is a fun rivalry. You know, when you think Big Ten rivalries, obviously it's in-state, it's a big deal. But you think more Michigan, Ohio State, recently Penn State, Ohio State. You know, Iowa, Wisconsin. So, but yeah, I think it's great when you have in-state rivals like this that are, you know, ranked this high, top 10 matchup, national, well, every game's on national TV, but you get it. You know, Michigan State's interesting because they deserve their ranking, but they, you know, they
haven't played anybody.
Well, they were fortunate to beat Indiana 20-15. I'm looking at their ledger here. Extremely fortunate to beat Nebraska, where they had like 10 total yards in the second half, something like that.
Yep.
Beat Miami by 21 points, but that was in anyone's game until the fourth quarter. So Michigan's probably been the more impressive team, but it's at Michigan State, and Michigan State keeps finding ways to win. I mean, if I had to make a pick right now, I'd probably take Michigan, but I'm looking forward to watching this one.
Intriguing one with Ole Miss at Auburn. How do you see that one playing out? Because I'm intrigued on that one Saturday night.
I mean, basically, I think you could just use the word intriguing for every SEC West game.
Yes.
I mean, I'm serious. Like, they're just all – no one's bad. A couple teams we think are really good, but Alabama is, you know, the best team, but they're not – clearly they're not, like, unbeatable. Auburn has been quietly pretty good. You know, the Penn State game probably could have gone either way. There's, you know, a lot was made of the questionable fourth down call, that fade there. No shame in losing to Georgia. Even, you know, they were, I would say, relatively competitive compared to what everyone else was doing. You go to Arkansas, you win. You go to LSU, you win that game. You know, we kind of lost faith in this team when they were fortunate to beat Georgia State, but they're quietly going about their business. But, you know, Ole Miss has been extremely impressive. I thought last week, you know, maybe they got LSU at the right time, you know, after LSU kind of played their best game, its best game of the year in that Florida game, that they were a little flat. But, you know, Ole Miss has been extremely impressive. You know, the defense has been a lot better. You know, look at, other than, you know, they gave 42 to Alabama, 51 to Arkansas, but other than that, everyone else 26 points or less. So I think Ole Miss is the better team. I'm looking forward to just, again, every SEC West game intrigues me. I'm looking forward to watching them all pretty much.
Talking to Mitch Light, and Mitch, let's talk about, we just talked to Clark Lee, and of course, he's still trying to get the foundation. You know, they took a what appeared to be a step forward in having the game in their hand at South Carolina, and then the step back against Mississippi. I'm looking at Wake Forest. Now, this is a team that, you know, Vanderbilt could model themselves. Clark Lee, I believe, was at Wake Forest for a while. Here they are at 7-0. They're a heavy favorite against Duke. You know, you look at the rest of the schedule, UNC, NC State, Clemson, BC. You know, I somebody will probably get them along the way, but they're putting together a really, really nice season for them. It's, you can count on one hand how many times, you know, they really can get into the mix here of the discussion of a one or two loss type of season. What have they done right? Why are they so good this year?
Slow build. And I was curious because I saw a stat about some of the worst offensive teams like in the last 20 years. Someone tweeted out the other day, and one of them was Wake Forest. And this is interesting because their numbers are so prolific this year. 2014, Dave Clawson's first year, which coincided with Derek Mason's first year at Vanderbilt, I think Wake Forest averaged like 212 yards per game, which is just awful. It's, like I said, it's one of the worst in this century. And they've had, you know, a slow build. They you know, to steal a term from college basketball, mid-majors, you hear, you want to get old and stay old. They have done that, and they have mastered it this year with the super seniors. They had I don't know the number off the top of my head, but they had a ton of guys come back for a sixth year. I bet if you pulled up their depth chart right now, of their 44, they're two deep. My guess is 80% of them are in their fourth year, fifth year, or sixth year in the program. They've got a good quarterback in Sam Hartman. That obviously helps. We've seen some of the better Vanderbilt teams. It's because the quarterback has been good. And look, they lost Kenneth Walker, who's at Michigan State, was in the Heisman discussions, an All-American running back. So, you know, they've had decent skill. They've hit on some quarterbacks. You know, in recent years, they've always had good quarterback play. They've had some good wide receivers as well. Surratt from a few years ago. And I think Dave Clawson's an outstanding coach. He's a great talent evaluator. You look at the recruiting rankings, they consistently are in the bottom five of Power Five programs. But they just, again, they develop, they recruit the kids, the right kids for their program, they develop, and then when you do it like that and you have consistency in your program, you're going to hit every 3, 4, 5 years, you're going to hit the sweet spot, the perfect storm, you got the right quarterback and maybe that veteran offensive line. And another thing that they've done, Dave Clawson's made good hires. They've lost some really good coaches because other schools have come in and paid them more. Like Mike Elko, who is now the defensive coordinator at Texas A&M, was Clark Lee's boss at Wake Forest. Notre Dame offered him more money to go there than Texas A&M offered even more money. So he is very well respected, Clawson is, and he continues to hire good coaches.
And Dave Clawson would be on the list. It's a long list of coordinators, coaches that Tennessee has run out of town. It's just, and I don't say that to single out Tennessee, because it happens to a lot of coaches. Coaches, a big failure in one place and a huge success in another. We've talked about, you know, some people that have been on James Franklin's staff that had a great amount of success on the Vanderbilt staff and then not so much at Penn State, that type of thing. It's amazing how that dynamic is always out there.
Yeah, and, you know, he was on Phil Fulmer's last staff, so the staff got fired. But, you know, I think that hurt I mean, I think you've asked SEC fans about Dave Clawson. They chuckle and say, oh, well, you know, he was at Tennessee. He was terrible. But he's been good wherever he's been. He's been a head coach at Fordham, Richmond. Now, he left Richmond, had a great program at Richmond, or was building a great program to take that, you know, offensive coordinator job at Tennessee, which he probably thought would lead to bigger and better things. That didn't work out. Went to Bowling Green, did a very good job at Bowling Green, a difficult place to win. And then, you know, Wake Forest, 2014, 1-7 in the ACC. 2015, 1-7. Then 3-5, 4-4, 3-5, 4-4, 3-4, now 4-0. It's just, they found the right guy for their school, and I think he's one of those guys who likes where he is. You don't see his name on any lists, really. Not that he wouldn't be successful somewhere else, it just seems to be the right fit for him.
We were talking about just recruiting philosophies. Clark Lee was bringing up Barton Simmons, and I know you've been following the recruiting scene a lot, Mitch, with some podcasts that you do. I know it's hard right now to sell the program at Vanderbilt right now, but what are you seeing any movement in the philosophy, the type of inroads that they're making in the early stages here with their quest to build the roster?
Well, yeah, and it's interesting about recruiting. It's picking up nationwide, I'd say it's picking up. There's been more commitments nationally in the past 2 or 3 weeks than there were in the first month of the season. For whatever reason, maybe just because of the pandemic and then everything opened back up, there were so many commitments in the summer. Vanderbilt was like a lot of schools. They got most of their commitments in their class over the summer, and I don't believe they've had one since the season started. But I think there's been one decommitment since the season started. Kid from Chattanooga, Baylor, I believe. So they're going about it the way they kind of said they would, and the way Wake Forest goes about it. They're just identifying guys that they think are good fits. They're clearly developmental. Most of them are developmental guys, looking for a lot of length on defense. That was something Derek Mason was very big on too. Selling early playing time, which seems to be a contradiction, but you're recruiting guys who you know you need to develop, but you're also, I guess, some of the better players, you're selling them on, you know, coming in with the chance to play right away. But it's difficult. I mean, they have their philosophy. They're confident in what they're doing, but they're also struggling on the field, and they're trying to sell these kids on their vision, and they're just hoping that kids can look past the struggles on the field. Hey, we've seen Vanderbilt's not alone trying to recruit players while your season's not going well. If kids only, you know, how would some of these struggling programs fill up their classes if kids only signed places at one? So it's obviously things would be going better for them probably if they were winning games, but it's probably, I don't think it deterred them or changed their philosophy at all.
Mitch Light is with us from The Athletic. All right, Mitch, I want to play the what-if game when it comes to the college football playoff, because this has been a fun year with, you know, some upsets and different teams, new blood. Right now, you obviously have Georgia, Alabama, Oklahoma that are in the top four, Cincinnati being the number two ranked team. But let's play the what-if game of the Big Ten cannibalizes itself like it appears could happen with Michigan, Michigan State playing each other. Obviously, Ohio State has to play them. And you take them out. I believe Oklahoma stumbles at some point. They've been playing with fire all year long. And I think somewhere down the line, they stumble. Is there a scenario in your mind where another SEC team other than Georgia and Alabama, let's say one of them doesn't make it because of a stumble, could Ole Miss or Kentucky be in this mix before it's all said and done?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot there. First of all, I think Ohio State's going to make the playoff. I mean, I know this is a hypothetical. I don't think they're going to be part of the cannibalization. I think that's a program that has righted the ship, and they are playing unbelievably well on offense right now. But to specifically answer your question, I think Ole Miss would have the better chance because of its strength of schedule. Yeah. And there's really not a... You know, Arkansas might, whoever finishes in last in the West isn't going to have a great record, but that's still a good team. The problem is for someone like Kentucky, they've already lost to Georgia, so they missed, you know, which is obviously no shame. You've missed the opportunity. With Florida kind of struggling, that's not a great win. Tennessee's a solid team, but it's not a top 25 team right now. And then you got Missouri and Vanderbilt, who have been two of the worst Power 5 teams. So, That's a much tougher sell to me. You know, a Kentucky team, let's say they went 11-1, and didn't win the West, and they're sitting at, didn't win the East, and they're sitting at home for the SEC championship game. Ole Miss has a much better case, even with probably two losses, because of the teams they would have beaten, the teams they would have played.
So, do you think the committee, even if Alabama loses to Georgia in the SEC title game with two losses, does that still keep them in, or do you think it knocks them out?
Well, it's a good question, but it just depends what happens. You know, what happens to Ohio State? What happens if like the scenario you said, where Oklahoma stumbles? How competitive is that game? You know, Alabama already beating Ole Miss. If Ole Miss is the team that's in third or in second in the West, and it's an Alabama-Ole Miss argument, then will Alabama beat them head-to-head? Not that that's everything, but then if it's Texas A&M, then you got Texas A&M already beat Alabama, or was the one team that beat Alabama. So a lot of scenarios there, but I'm a big believer in not just wins and losses, but how do you look, especially in a championship game, if you're going to, you know, put a team in that just lost the championship game. If they lose 24-3 and look bad offensively because Georgia makes everyone look bad offensively, that's a lot different than losing 24-21 and playing well.
So do you agree or disagree on Oklahoma? And I say that they're going to stumble.
I think they might stumble but still win the Big 12. Off the top of my head, I'm sure, you know, they've already played Texas. They still have Oklahoma State and Bedlam.
They have Baylor, Iowa State, Oklahoma State are the three big ones, and then Texas Tech this weekend.
Yeah, I would, if I were a betting man, which I'm not to the degree you are, I'm a slightly, you know, like to dabble every once in a while, I would bet that more likely they're going to have at least one loss and go undefeated the rest of the way. A little alarming, the Kansas game. Now, they won at the end. They unbelievable play by Caleb Williams there. But, you know, we kind of thought they righted the ship with Caleb Williams taking over and all that. And then to be down in the fourth quarter at Kansas is not a good look. Again, they won the game. But this is not a vintage Oklahoma team where we're used to seeing them. We're used to seeing them blow everyone out and then stumble against a Kansas State or an Iowa State. This team's different. They're just finding ways to win all the close games.
I love the tweet that Kansas put out there. It was as if, you know, hey, you know, you didn't think we had a chance, but hey, we're winning. The gates are open. Come on down. If you're in the area, just come on in.
That reminded me, Willie, I don't know if you remember where you were. You might have been doing basketball-related activities. The first game I ever covered for the Vanderbilt Hustler was my freshman year. I think it was 2 or 3 weeks into our freshman year, Willie, and Vanderbilt was playing Alabama. And I think it was pouring rain.
Pouring.
At Vanderbilt Stadium. And I don't remember the details, but Vanderbilt came back and was coming back in the fourth quarter. And, you know, from the press box, you can see the student entrance over there. And I just remember seeing waves of people coming back into the stadium. And I don't want to say if this isn't – I'll have to apologize to Corey Harris later if this is not true. I think Corey Harris, who at that point was a wide receiver, missed a – dropped the ball in the end zone in the pouring rain that would have won the game or given Vanderbilt the lead late. But that's something I'll always remember.
Oh, yeah. They were way behind. John Gromos was the quarterback. They were down 20-0. I left at halftime because I was getting soaked. I went back to my freshman dorm and then was told that the comeback was on. I listened on the radio. Could have won.
I'll have to look at the details in that, yeah. About if it was Corey Harris dropped the pass. Gary Hollingsworth, that's the name from the pass, yes. Quarterback for Alabama, I believe.
That was a good Alabama team, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. So that was I know we got to go soon. My next year I went down to Alabama, and it was Alabama, I think, started the season 0-2, 0-3 under Gene Stallings, and then I think it was 56-0 Alabama at the half. And there was no comeback. But that game was noted for Derek Gragg, who is now the athletic director at Northwestern, caught three touchdowns, the only three touchdowns, I believe, of his career in that game.
Mitch, appreciate it as always. Have a great week. We'll do it again next week.
Hey, Darren, you don't want me and Willie to talk about 1989, 90?
Pick a year. Pick a year. 1993, 95, 97. We're there.
You have to leave them wanting more. You can pick it up next week.
That's why you're the best, Darren.
Mitch, thank you as always. Mitch Light from The Athletic. Willie, you're going to tell everybody about Lee Company.
Well, first let me tell you about 1999, Vanderbilt football. No, okay.
99. That was last time the Braves were in the World
Series. I see where Jay's going.
And the Titans were in the Super Bowl.
Oh, that's right. That was a great year in 99. Okay, let's talk to you about Lee Company before we come back with our final segment. Lee Company is a big sponsor of Nashville Predators hockey, and they've got all the services lined up for you. Today, let's talk about general maintenance for you. maintenance at your home or at your business. You need some help. You're not Mr. Handyman. I know I'm not Mr. Handyman, but Lee Company is always right there at your service. They're a phone call away or an online appointment. Yeah, you can go to LeeCompany.com, make the online appointment while you're at work, continue the work. They'll come take care of the problem. You're free to go to the Predators game or anything that you choose because they will take care of what you need, whether it's door issues, maintenance issues, anything you can think of. Let them come help take care of the problem. Also, you can call them at 615-567-1000. We talk about this type of season. It's starting to get a little cooler. You might start running that heat, especially at night. If it's not running well, call them now before it really gets into the cold months and you're constantly running it. 615-567-1000 for Lee Company. Or go to LeeCompany.com. Lee Company, let their decades of expertise go to work for you.